We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Blue Wire.
First pick in the 1991 NBA draft, the Charlotte Hornets select Larry Johnson from University of
I'm not supposed to be here, man. A lot of people from where I'm from, you know, don't make it.
Charlotte, we're back.
Welcome, Hornets fans. This is Richie. We thank you guys for joining us for another Buzz Beat. Please make sure you rate us and review us on Apple Podcasts. And if it's funny, if it's thoughtful, we'll definitely give it a read on an upcoming episode. On today's episode, we wanted to get to a couple of things involving their most recent game against the Minnesota Timberwolves, but we are just going to exchange what we thought were the most intriguing or important stats that we've been keeping an eye on. And we're just going to go round robin, passing them back and forth between Lee and I. So I will be joined by Lee. Lee, how's it going? How was your Thanksgiving? Have you been keeping up with the World Cup as well?
Yeah. I've actually watched both games and have seen a total of 2 goals in 180 minutes. And I know that that is like the most stereotypical American thing to say, but I'm going to say it anyway. I am not a European club football. I mean, I wouldn't say I'm not a fan. I just don't pay attention to it. Yeah. But I do kind of get into the World Cup. Like, I kind of love the World Cup. I'll even watch like other countries' games from time to time if I get a chance. It's been fun, and we'll see if the U.S. can get out of this group or not. If they can score a couple of goals next Tuesday.
Yeah, they will have to score at least one. They need to win to advance here. So here's what I actually wanted to start with: Gordon Hayward's injury on his left shoulder. I was snooping around IG after the game, and I don't know why I was doing this. I just happened to be on Instagram and
investigative reporting, Richie.
Yeah, I wouldn't think anything of it. I was just on there, and I saw that his wife, Robin, had posted something, and I clicked on it, not expecting to see what I was about to read. And she basically was disputing the Hornets medical team about how he's been out because of a shoulder bruise. And she's saying it's a fracture. She's saying it's broken. And she said that she's over, you know, the medical staff not protecting the players and having them play when they aren't ready. And I know there's always two sides or three sides to a story, but if this happens to be true, like it's a pretty, pretty bad look for the Hornets organization when it comes to reporting the facts or not reporting the facts. I was at the game on Wednesday, the game right before Thanksgiving against the Sixers, and in warmups he was going through his warmups. He looked perfectly fine shooting the ball. Like, I think his left shoulder, because it's his off shoulder, might not be as in pain when he shoots the ball, but when you watch that game and you saw him drive into traffic and bump in with opponents, he naturally had to shy away. And this was the game that she was talking about, how he was basically, I don't know if she used the word force, but basically he was put out there when he wasn't necessarily ready for all that type of contact. So there was no way to avoid it unless you say, hey, Gordon, only drive left to protect that left shoulder. There's really no way to eliminate contact because we also got the opposite end of the court. Last thing I'll say on this in terms of just this whole situation, if you remember, he actually re-aggravated his shoulder injury. It might have been the game prior against the Wizards, and he was in and out, in and out. And over on the sideline, Joe Sharp is just massaging his shoulder, and they just send him back on the court. And I think even like re-injures it again on a dunk late in the game. So it's funny to think about that specific moment in context now, knowing that his shoulder could have been a whole lot worse than maybe just a bruise. So thoughts on that, Lee?
Obviously, it's tough to kind of speculate on this type of stuff, but I think we all, obviously, which we are right now, like we're just kind of like pontificating. I mean, you always have to take it with a grain of salt when it's the NBA wife taking to social media. I mean, I remember when the Warriors got beat in 2016, and Ayesha Curry like had a long tweet thread about how the NBA was rigged, and she can't stand to see the cheating anymore. And it's like, and this is a totally different situation. It's an injury. It's not like a conspiracy theory about the NBA being rigged, but it's kind of, we'll see. Now, what I will say though is, interestingly enough, last night, Adrian Wojnarowski tweets after all this had happened, he tweets that Hayward will be evaluated week to week on his return from a fractured left shoulder. So he does have a fractured left shoulder. So, like, that is factual.
Yep.
Whether the training staff was irresponsible in any way, I think we can only kind of guess on. I will say, unfortunately, I think that the Charlotte training staff has given a little bit of ammo to people that might want to blame them. I mean, with the, with the Cody Martin thing, all of a sudden he just out of the blue, out of nowhere, has surgery. With LaMelo's comments about how he maybe wouldn't have played if Dennis Smith Jr. wasn't injured and he wasn't quite. So, like, it does kind of suck that there's a little bit of, like, if there's smoke, there's fire thing going on here, but at the same time, I think, anybody in the Twitter sphere trying to play doctor is probably going to be wrong more than they're right. But it is interesting, and I think we would have been, a lot of Hornets fans are talking about this, so we needed to at least bring it up.
Yeah, and it's one of those things too where people have gotten on to Gordon Hayward about him sitting out probably when he's just like milking his injury, but this is kind of like the opposite effect. And I know that he was out there when he probably shouldn't have been, playing through the discomfort and all that type of stuff. So there's a narrative out there that talks about how Hayward is, made of glass, he's injury prone, which I don't think anyone could deny, but also there's a narrative out there that he is just milking this. But to this specific situation, clearly he was out there probably when he shouldn't have been.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, I think the other thing with this is, the way that Wojnarowski tweet was worded is, it was almost like kind of like a, you know how these week to week things go. I mean, it almost sounds like it's indefinite. So, I mean, obviously, if we want to kind of pivot quickly into any thoughts about the last couple games before we go into the bigger segment, I mean, last night, obviously no Cody Martin, no LaMelo Ball, no Dennis Smith Jr., no Gordon Hayward. I mean, this team is just absolutely riddled with injuries to some of its most important players, particularly to its kind of on-ball playmaking parts of the roster. And, they've won two in a row at the same time. So here they are, kind of backing their way back into maybe giving some Hornets fans some false optimism potentially. But yeah, I mean, this team is just completely, defunct with the injuries and the rotations that they're having to put on, but it's allowed some of the young guys to get on the floor for more minutes. So I'm sure we'll talk about that either in our interesting stats or here really quick.
Yeah, just real quickly about some of the younger players and the players that have not gotten a lot of minutes, you know, until recently. I do want to talk about, and I'm sure you want to gush about Kai Jones as well, but I kind of want to talk about Théo Maledon. I think that he showed up big in the second half against the Sixers, and he picked right where he left off. And he has some skills that kind of just kind of pop off the screen to me when you watch him. And I think one thing too, like if you are going to be a player that is playing under Clifford, at the very least, if you want to get onto the court, if you have nothing else, you need to be competing on the defensive side of the court. And I'm not saying Théo has nothing else, but I'm just saying at the bare minimum, if you want to show some kind of value to Clifford, you got to compete. And I think that that's one skill that I noticed from Théo. I think that his height, not necessarily his height, but his like his weight and his build, he's a little bit undersized when it comes to that aspect, but he is not afraid to pick up full court. He did so in the, against the Sixers. He even got a steal in the backcourt against the Sixers. He is going to force his opponents to waste some energy, wear them down. He's going to navigate screens. He's going to compete as hard as he can on that end of the court. And so he has that going for him. So I'm sure Clifford loves that aspect of his game. But there are some other things that I've been noticing with Théo that, you know, I wanted to point out, whether it's from this game or against the Sixers. But, you know, maybe this is just like a point guard thing in me because that's the position that I played. But very little stuff that he does in transition. When he goes out on that secondary break, he knows the angles and how to weave in and out of traffic to where he can draw in defenders before kicking it out. And I know it seems like a minor thing, but I think he is purposely drawing away defenders from his shooters, and he makes that kick out pass to a shooter. And then number three, he's done a good job relatively like of getting downhill and drawing fouls. He drew fouls in the past couple of games, two and ones against Minnesota. And so, yeah, I know that you probably want to talk about Kai Jones, but I don't want us to forget about Théo.
No, I'm actually really glad you brought him up quickly because he's not going to come up, at least on my end, from kind of the interesting stats perspective. So I'm glad we can talk about him super quick. Théo Maledon was a player that I was almost irresponsibly high on in the 2020 draft cycle. I think I've mentioned this before. I mean, like, as far as I know, I was the only guy on quote-unquote draft Twitter that had Théo Maledon as a better prospect than his French counterpart, Killian Hayes. Like, I just thought Théo was better. And part of the reason, and that's still, I think, an open discussion. Théo's on his second team. Killian's really struggled as a high draft pick. So neither one of them has exactly blown the doors off early in their NBA career. But Maledon, one of the reasons why I was so high on him was he was such an intelligent pick and roll player as a youth player in the French system. And he's starting to show some of that. You talked about his ability to kind of weave in and out and use angles and deception because he's not the most explosive guy, but he does kind of understand how to create advantage more cerebrally, I guess, as kind of a ball attacker. And I wish I could remember who had these stats. It may have been British Buzz, and I hope I have that right. And I haven't double-checked it, but there were some stats on Twitter about how Théo Maledon has been the Hornets' most effective pick and roll ball handler from like a points per possession standpoint. And I do think over the last two games, Richie, he has looked a bit more aggressive attacking the rim, particularly last night. He had a lot of downhill rim and lane pressure with the ball in his hands. And he's been fairly efficient too. I mean, I think the shooting was always something that was, you know, kind of a huge swing skill for Maledon. And, you know, right now, you know, he's not a dead eye shooter and he's low volume. He's pretty judicious with his jump shooting, but he is shooting 38% from three right now. And is almost at 50% from the field. I mean, obviously you'd want that to be a bit higher. But look, he looks like a young, I mean, he's 21 years old too, Richie. So it's like, you know, he's looking like a good bet from this Hornets front office for a young backup guard in the developmental pipeline that I have just been begging for it feels like 3 years now. And they got two of them in the same offseason with Dennis Smith Jr. and Maledon.
Yeah, he does lead the Hornets in points per possession off of pick and roll ball handling.
There you go.
But the volume is a little bit lower per game. I know that he hasn't played a lot of minutes per se, but just on a per game possession basis, it's actually not as high as like some of these other players. And it actually leads me to one of my other stats that I'm going to get into a little bit later. But are you ready to switch over to the intriguing stats section, Ali?
Okay. I love this. I love this exercise, by the way. And we, Richie, we have not shared with each other our stats. So there'll be some genuine reacting and conversation here.
And hopefully, you know, there could be some overlap. There could be some duplicates, but I'm presenting four and you are presenting four. Is that correct?
Correct.
All right. So I don't know really where how I organize this or where I want to start, but I'm going to start with an aspect that I very much miss from last year's team. There are certain players missing from the equation that made it work last year. In addition to that, we've had LaMelo, who's only played three games this season. So that's obviously playing a role in the dip in this stat that I'm about to bring up. So the thing that I'm referring to is the time and efficiency after a made shot. And this also includes dead ball turnovers. So the team is still pushing after live ball turnovers, and that's to be expected out of any team, really. And they have been very good at that aspect in, you know, the past couple of years. But I'm talking specifically after a made shot. So this season, seconds following a made field goal, they rank 15th in the NBA. So dead center, right in the center in terms of the amount of time it takes them to, you know, possess the ball after a made shot. Last season, they were 5th in the NBA in terms of the quickness after a made shot. So that to me is a considerable drop off. Now, where more considerable difference is not the speed, but it's the points per possession. So this season, after a made shot, they are averaging 1.01 points per possession, which is 29th in the league. Last year, they were 7th in the league in points per possession following a made field goal. So I think what I'm getting at here, it speaks to the willingness that they were, one, you know, trying to do that to get the defense on their heels. The longer possessions also speak to the difficulty in getting open looks early in half court offense. So this team, it's built on turning teams over and scoring without the defense getting set. I'm not sure we'll ever see them get back to that efficiency or that desire that we saw last year because of some of the key pieces. I'm sure you know who I'm referring to, but that's just something that has stood out to me, and it's an aspect of the team that I've loved. They push after anything, makes, misses, turnovers, rebounds. That's what they did last year.
Yeah, it's a really interesting stat, and I think it is. So the way I think about it is like the superstructure of this offense, right? And kind of like the main switchboard of offensive efficiency. I mean, the Hornets are now. This is assuming this didn't change after any late games last night, but I'm pretty sure it's still the case. The Hornets are now officially dead last in offensive efficiency and offensive rating on the season. And obviously last season they had a top 10 offense. So this is just, I think the stat that you're sharing, which is really interesting and which was such a big part of why the Hornets were top 10 in offense last year and why they were super fun to watch, was because they got out and run, particularly after made baskets. I mean, I remember us talking about it multiple times on the podcast last year, just like these little nuggets of how fun and explosive they would be to get the ball out, hit LaMelo, and then hit a streaking whoever it was, you know, Plumlee, Bridges, Washington, Hayward, Oubre, whoever was running the floor. So, like I said, the way I'm thinking about it is like the overall offensive efficiency has plummeted to such a damning degree. A big part of it is because of the injuries. Some of it may or may not be because of the coaching. And then you have all these kind of downstream offensive efficiency stats that are also suffering. And I think this is a really interesting one to point out.
Yeah, it just kind of goes back to the idea that they suffer in the half court. And the way that you can combat that is try to push in transition as much as possible. But maybe they just don't have the horses to do so. So that's really the only reason that I brought up this statistic here. And I thought it was very intriguing from the Hornets' perspective.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Okay, my first stat. So the name of this segment is Kelly Oubre is tricking us all and hopefully another team. I think there's been kind of a general energy and vibe on Hornets Twitter, and even from some of us at times, including myself, kind of feeling like Kelly Oubre is having a better season than he did last year. And I think after digging into the numbers, and which is why I really like this idea for an episode, is that I will try to make the argument here that most of the perceived improvements he has made have just been a downstream effect of more volume.
Okay.
And so
I want to interject here real quick. I like this because I have a stat on Kelly Oubre as well, but I'm taking the positive. So you go ahead with your negative, and I will probably just kind of piggyback off of you here with my Kelly Oubre stat, which actually I was going to save to the end, but I might as well get it in here after you.
Oh, this is perfect. So we do have a little bit of overlap and potentially on different sides of an opinion. So this is actually great. All right. So I have the good, right? So two of the good things Kelly Oubre is doing is he is averaging the most points of his entire career, and he is averaging the most steals in his entire career. And I do think a fair counterpoint to the argument that I would make would be that it does seem from the eye test, and I think there are some statistical backing, including kind of averaging the most steals he has as a player, is that he has been more active and more locked in defensively. And I think that is a downstream effect directly to Steve Clifford. What I think the more kind of specific point I would like to make is that from an offensive standpoint, he has not been more efficient basically anywhere on the court besides kind of like the long mid-range, which is a weird place for him to be more efficient than he was last year, but almost anywhere else. I mean, so to kind of explain away, for lack of a better word, the most points in his career is he's also has the most field goal attempts of his career, but by a pretty healthy margin. He's shooting worse from three than he did even last season at 31%. He's shooting worse from at the rim than he did last season, which that actually surprised me. Like, from the eye test, it feels like he has finished around the rim pretty decently this year, but it's worse than last year. And it wasn't like just by a sliver. It was like by at least a moderate margin.
Yeah.
He's shooting a worse effective field goal percentage than last year. He's shooting a worse true shooting percentage last year. The Hornets are minus 6.4 net rating with Oubre on the floor, which, to be fair, the Hornets, like, net rating is -7. So that isn't necessarily a completely damning stat. But last year, you know, the Hornets were basically dead even. They were flat with Oubre on the floor. The defensive efficiency numbers with Oubre on the floor are basically exactly the same as they were last year. The Hornets are, by the way, are like a league average defense right now. The defense has actually kind of held up for the most part this season, which you would kind of expect with the structure that Clifford has put into place. So, again, my stat here is like Kelly Oubre is tricking us into thinking he's become a more efficient offensive player because of the volume and the raw numbers. The caveat I would say is that I do think he has been a little bit more active and locked in defensively, but I hope that there's some team out there that won't dig far enough to think, oh man, Kelly Oubre averaging 20 points a game. Let's go grab him.
I would agree to a certain extent with everything that you just said. I think I could explain away the inefficiencies because of the volume. Let me put it that way. I think,
It cuts both ways.
Yeah, because he has more of a role this year, because he's asked to do a little bit more with the ball in his hands, I think the efficiency has dropped. And I'm not even going to speak to the defensive side of the court with Oubre, because you're right. Maybe with him playing under Clifford, you're seeing a little bit more activity, but it's crazy to think that you need a specific coach for Oubre for him to put forth effort on that end of the court. Like that can't be the case wherever he goes. So the statistic that I'm going to bring up is that his drives, his rim pressure, and his ball handling possessions have all been for the better. He has changed his shot diet. I think, like you or most people might argue, because he is getting more minutes, you're probably seeing more attempts at the rim. But I'm going to look at this from a per possession, per game basis. And the Hornets are putting the ball in his hands a little bit more because of some of the injuries. I get it. But in terms of rim attempts per 75 possessions, he averaged 4.9 last year. This year is up to 6.7. In terms of drives per game, so putting the ball in his hands and letting him get downhill and drive to the rim, he was at 3.6 per game last year. He has basically doubled that at 6.2 drives per game this year. And he has 123 total drives. All of last season, he had 271. So he is basically halfway there, and he's played, you know, less than half the games that he did last year. So, and then one more thing that I want to talk about with Kelly Oubre, again, because when we think about Kelly Oubre, we think about the volatility with his three-point shot, up and down, up and down.
He
can roll ball handler possessions. This is kind of what I was referring to earlier with the Tao stuff. This season, he has had the ball in his hands, and Clifford has been asked him to play out of the pick and roll. 6.6% of his offensive possessions last year, that's how frequent he ran a possession as a ball handler out of the pick and roll. So 6.6, think of that number. Now this year, it's 19.4 of his possessions has been him as a ball handler out of the pick and roll. And also his points per possession have gone up out of the pick and roll. 0.66 points per possession last year, which is not good at all. To this year, it's you know, decent, above average at 0.91 points per possession. So I think he's raising his stock. I would agree with you. Maybe we can trick someone into taking him on and getting some kind of assets back. But I think because he's asked to do a little bit more with the ball in his hands this year, I'm noticing a dip in efficiency, but I'm also noticing that it's not like he's just standing in the corner, you know, taking shots or hovering around the dunker spot. And that's why he has more shots at the rim. No, he is driving. He's using pick and roll, ball handler possessions. So that's the positive side that I would like to highlight with Kelly Oubre. So that's my second stat.
I think that's really good. And it's kind of nice that we had kind of complimentary and potentially even slightly differing views on that. I think the easy pushback for me to make on that would be that part of the reason why the Hornets are so horrid from an offensive efficiency standpoint is because they are having to ask players like Oubre to put the ball on the floor. That being said, That's not his fault. I mean, LaMelo Ball is out. Dennis Smith Jr. is in and out of the lineup. Hayward's in and out of the lineup. Like, the Hornets don't have any better options. Oubre has had to become a more well-rounded offensive player in those guys' absence. And so he's just trying to take advantage of an opportunity. And to be fair, I do think the right – and I think BG even mentioned this on a previous pod. Like, the right team with the right role, Oubre probably could help a playoff team kind of in the right situation. Like, I don't think that's far-fetched at all. So yeah, I think that obviously there's – you know, I would push back on the vibe from Hornets Twitter that Oubre has kind of, you know, become this super valuable player at the deadline. That being said, he has shown a little bit more well-roundedness to his game, I think, that could be attractive to teams that are looking for, like, one more, yeah, you know, one more wing with size that can make some shots.
The truth is probably somewhere in between what you're saying and what I'm saying. So
exactly.
he's made some improvements this year, but he's also dipped in some efficiency stats. Let's get to your second stat, because that was my second stat.
Okay, my second stat. You know, if you're a frequent listener to this podcast, this is going to be definitely the first time you've ever heard about this, the center rotation update. obviously, that is in jest. We talk about it all the time. So I think the argument that I'm going to continue to try to make here, and if you've listened to this podcast at all, I will preface this by saying I think you would be well aware that I am not a Mason Plumlee hater. Like, I think Mason is useful in certain ways. But that being said, the argument I'm going to try to make and continue to try to beat the drum on is that what I would like to see is not necessarily that I would like to see Nick Richards start. Like, I don't particularly care who starts the game. What I would like to see is the minute allocation gap between Plumlee and Richards continue to narrow. Right now, Mason's playing 27 minutes per game and Nick Richards is playing 19 minutes per game. It's not a massive gap, but, you know, 8 minutes in an NBA game is like 3/4 of a quarter. So Plumlee is still preferred by Clifford in the rotation at just about every juncture, including closing games. So Nick Richards on the floor for the Charlotte Hornets, 734 possessions, plus 2.2 net rating. I think what's really interesting about the Richards minutes is that, you know, the offense is just okay. Obviously, the Hornets offense writ large is pretty undesirable. So it's very hard to pick out individual players and find good offensive numbers at all. But the defensive numbers are stellar with Nick Richards on the floor. And I know there are times when he gets lost in rotations, and I know there are times where he gets out of positions kind of flailing for block shots that he shouldn't go after. But he really has become a more disciplined defensive player. The Hornets allow 108.1 points per 100 possessions with Nick Richards on the floor, which is 84th percentile. So, like, they're a top, you know, 10 to 12 defense when Nick Richards is on the floor. Contrast that with Mason Plumlee. The Mason Plumlee minutes, which is about just over 1,000 possessions compared to about 700 for Nick Richards. The Hornets are minus 11.2 net rating, and the offense and the defense is a really bad low percentile. And then when you go to the Mason Plumlee off the floor numbers, the offense is still bad, just like it always is, but the defense is good. So, I mean, they basically mirror each other. And so when I'm looking at these numbers, and it just becomes so kind of painfully clear that Nick Richards is an ascending talent and that Mason Plumlee, although is very useful in certain ways. And what's interesting is Mason has been such an incredible, like, passer from the center position this year. I mean, Mason has like an above 20% assist rate, which is ridiculous for a center. But that hasn't translated into more efficient offense when he's on the floor. So, like, it's really nice to see kind of the backdoor chemistry that him and Rozier have in kind of like pseudo transition possessions. And he does, you know, facilitate from the high post at times, but it hasn't meant that the Hornets offense has been any better from an efficiency standpoint. So again, I do not think Mason Plumlee should be, you know, regulated to like the buried on the bench. None of that type of stuff. Like, he is still a useful player at times, and particularly was useful late in the game, actually last night.
Yeah.
But I do think that you have to kind of read the writing on the wall, and you have to kind of continue to give Nick Richards more and more opportunities. And I think that's happening. I just want to continue to see it happen.
Yeah, that's something that I've been clamoring for too, to kind of close that gap in minutes between the two. And to your point, I think people are way too harsh on Plumlee. I think
they are.
Yeah, I mean, specifically in that Minnesota game, in the fourth quarter alone, he had 4 of his 6 offensive rebounds at some crucial points in that game, where he just extends the play, gives second chance opportunities. And, you know, it might not result always in an offensive basket, and he is a guy that can pass teammates open on that backdoor cut. But to your point, some of the numbers, when you bear them out in terms of the overall efficiency numbers when he's on the court versus off the court, you do see some drastic changes in terms of how the team performs. I have become a bigger fan of Nick Richards over the course of the offseason, over the course of these first 20 games or so here with Charlotte. And he is a guy that on both ends of the court, he is effective. Offensively, he could be a pick and roll guy. He's massive. He can get some offensive rebounds. Defensively, he can erase shots at the rim. He's not the most nimble person on the court per se, but he is doing stuff that allows the Hornets to be successful on both ends of the court. So do you want me to go to my third stat?
Yeah. So the only last tiny little comment I was going to make in this center rotation segment is we're still basically getting no PJ at the 5.
Yeah.
I think all that is wait and see. Let's wait and see until it, you know, if this roster ever gets fully healthy. Let's see if that is reintroduced later in the season. That was the only other thing I was going to say. But again, like you said, I'm not one of these kind of you know, hysterical Mason Plumlee haters. I just think we do have kind of a rising young center on our team, and we should probably start to get him even more opportunities. So yeah, go ahead with your third stat, Rich.
Yeah, so PJ Washington, just looking at it right now, he's only played 23 minutes without Plumlee, Richards, Mark Williams, or even Kai Jones. I know Kai Jones and PJ, if they played together, PJ would probably still be the 5, but 23 minutes without some of the other bigs on the court. So I'm going to stick with the big here and go with Nick Richards, and ooh, I'm going to talk about his offensive fouls and the non-charge variety, setting. He picked up one against Minnesota last night, so I figured I'd throw this stat in here. He has 11 offensive fouls that have not been charges. That ranks 8th most in the NBA. The leader, if you want to call him the leader, has 18, which I think is Steven Adams or maybe even Cat, someone up there at 18. So he is 7 off the most. And so what we're doing, we're throwing out the charges. And for him specifically, we're talking about bad screens. And I know when it comes to screening, there are so many factors that come into play, like the ball handler, if they leave too soon before the big gets set, you know, it's not always on the big or the screener that is in charge of setting the screen there. I've noticed sometimes that he will throw out his hip at the last second to get some last minute contact. He may not have the angle correct, and I've already talked about him not being nimble. So if he has to flip the screen at the last second, it's just not something that in his, you know, that's in his repertoire. So I don't necessarily think he's been that bad as the numbers suggest. I just think that he's a massive player that sets hard screens. I actually think he's been a good pick and roll player. I've been saying that since the offseason. I'm just not sure how quickly this will go away, if it can be fixed, but Richard's screen setting will have to be something that is looked at, and it's not just him. It could be the ball handler. It could just also be his size and just the contact that he makes on some of these players. So I thought I'd throw that out there. 11 offensive fouls that are non-charges, which probably all come in the form of illegal screens.
Yeah, I mean, no, I think this is a very fair point to bring up, because it feels like, I mean, the stats say it's not quite this frequent, but it does feel like he does it every single game.
Yep.
And you're right. It's, As far, at least the ones that I've observed, they do seem to be more, I think more of the blame actually does fall with Richards. I mean, you're absolutely right in that an attacking guard can do a lot to help a big not pick these up. But with Richards specifically, it feels like it's always, you know, he knows in his brain he shouldn't do it, but he just can't quite help himself when he knows that he's not going to make like perfect contact. He just can't help to lean over or, like you said, stick that hip out or pivot a little bit. He just can't quite help himself. So I think this is a real actual problem for him right now that he needs to get better at. The only thing I think I would maybe to offer some optimism on would be 2 points that I think he had problems with early in his NBA career that he has not completely alleviated, but that he has shown the ability to focus on something he's bad at and improve at it. And the first example I would give would be his hands. Like, his hands and catching have certainly gotten better over his 3 seasons. He'll still drop one every now and then that makes you just kind of like put your head in your hands and you know, he gives away an easy basket or a dunk because he doesn't catch one. But he has gotten like, I don't know, 30 to 45% better at catching the ball, I think. The other one that he's still working on but has also improved at is, I mentioned it earlier, he had a bad habit of just flailing for block shots, you know, falling for pimp, like the most simple pump fake and getting out of position. He still does it at times, but he's become more disciplined around the rim. He's become more judicious on leaving his feet, and he snares defensive rebounds after challenging shots way more often than he used to. So my hope would be, Richie, that the coaching staff is noticing the same thing you're noticing and that they are working with him on this, and that in 2 to 3 months or even next season, he will have improved at this, because you're exactly right. He does this way too often.
Yeah. All right. So go ahead with your third stat, Lee.
All right. Third stat. I think we've been kind of like bearing the lead maybe a little bit on this one, but we've got to talk about Kai Jones a little bit. Kai Jones, who was a 2021 lottery pick, the Hornets traded into the first round to get him last year. Kai Jones is finally in the lineup. Hornets Twitter is abuzz and just happy as can be. You know, we talked about it a little bit on the last pod. Essentially, what has happened is Steve Clifford has decided JT Thor has had some opportunities and has maybe had some moments, but just hasn't taken advantage of those minutes like you'd like. I talked about in the last pod where, you know, if JT Thor isn't spacing the floor effectively, then you might as well go with Kai Jones because he does just about everything else better. And so this segment is obviously called Kai Jones is a future Hall of Famer and all-time great. So Kai, I mean, you talk about small sample size theater. I mean, I am criminally reaching here to pull out some of these stats because they don't matter yet, but I'm going to recite them anyway because they're hilarious. In 55 non-garbage time possessions for Kai Jones, the Hornets are plus 54.2. The offensive rating and the defensive rating with Kai Jones in the game would both be number one in the league by a large margin.
Sustainable.
Yes, completely sustainable. He is, you know, Ralph Sampson, essentially.
Secret weapon.
He had his best game last night against the T-Wolves. He had 9 points and 13 rebounds. And, you know, obviously I'm joking about the on-off stats, but from a more kind of prescriptive and actual productive conversation point, I do think he has really breathed some life and energy into this second unit. I mean, I've said it a million times, but I was very high on Kai in the draft process. I had him as a top 10 prospect in his class. And part of that was because I felt like he had a much higher floor than people realize because of the athleticism, the length, the energy. He seems just elated to have this opportunity. He's taking advantage of it. I think we're gonna see some growing pains, but it feels like he's kind of cemented himself in this rotation right now. And the only reason I say that is because the returning players, you know, the Cody Martins, the LaMelo Balls, the Gordon Haywards, the Dennis Smith Juniors, their return isn't necessarily going to impact Kai Jones' minutes like it might a Teo Maledon,
right,
you know, type. Like, it, you know, PJ Washington has been healthy, Miles Plumlee has been healthy, Nick Richards has been healthy. I think Kai Jones can kind of be that fourth front court player. Obviously, the other interesting thing about all this Kai Jones stuff is that he's playing almost exclusively at the floor. He's playing with one of these other bigs. Obviously, based on the numbers I just provided, which is that the offense has been just fine with Kai Jones on the floor, I think let's wait 10 to 15 games into the Kai Jones experience. Let's get a bigger sample size, and let's see if the offense can actually be better than the offense is with Kai Jones off the floor. I don't know if that's going to be the case, though, just because when you have Richards and Jones on the floor, or Plumlee and Jones on the floor, you give up so much spacing and shooting. But for now, it's working just fine, Richie.
I think energy is the best word that you use to describe him. He just brings a ball of energy when he gets out there on the court. Yes, those statistics will definitely even out over time, but I think everyone is enjoying his minutes when he gets out there. And the playing the four versus the five, that's been a debate that I've had. I even saw it in Summer League. They played him at the four. I want to say the first two games of Summer League, or the first three games, and then the latter half of Summer League, they switched him over to the five, and he just looked way more effective in terms of just getting downhill. But at least now when he's coming in, he's trying to make the most of his opportunity, regardless of what position he plays. I'm going to get to my final stat. This is actually my favorite one, and I know we're pressed for time here, so I'll probably go a little bit quicker than normal, but I don't have a creative name here, Lee, but Dennis Smith Jr.'s rim finishing is what I'm going to call it.
Ooh, very straight
to the point here. He's always been a rim pressure guy throughout the course of his career. Getting there has never been a problem for him. It's always been about the efficiency. This is the first season of his sixth season where he has finished at the rim above 60%. Now, obviously, we've got plenty of games left to play. Now, could it regress? Sure. But I'm not going to argue that. But I'll say this. Like, he's currently shooting 67% within 4 feet of the hoop, which is 9 percentage points higher than his next closest season. What I would say is this. Outside of his first two seasons in the NBA, he's never played more than 40 games in a season. So if you want to argue the sample size, cool, but when you're comparing it to his other seasons, it's not like he's played 82 games. Like, he's been injured for a lot of these seasons. So as I've watched him this season, I've noticed his strength, his athleticism, clearing space, getting into the paint, getting downhill, and I think his deceleration and finishing around the rim has been refreshing to see. And I wanted to add one more thing. I think this is the coolest part of this statistic when it relates to finishing at the rim, but more specifically during clutch situations. So the NBA defines clutch situations as a game within 5 points, under 5 minutes to play. But there's a site called Inpredictable, and they define clutch in a more detailed way, where the lead basket could swing the game one way or the other. But then they have this other category, Lee, called clutch squared or double clutched or something like that, where it's like the top 1% of impact. I think it has to be in the final minute of the game. It has to be a game that the team is either up one or the team in possession is down three. So it's a smaller window.
Yeah, cool.
It's a very high impact of the game. So just to give some context here, Devin Booker has taken the most of these clutch squared shots at 9.
Makes sense.
At 9. So it's, you know, there's not a lot of shots to be had here. DSJ has taken 4 of these shots, and he has made all 4.
Wow.
And three of these four have been at the rim. And he and Giannis are the only two players in the NBA who have made all of their shots in these situations. And yes, it's only been four, maybe compared to Devin Booker's nine attempts, but he's made all four of his four attempts in clutch squared situations, and three of those have been at the rim.
That is neat. I mean, it's just neat that they have that kind of old. It's like it's almost like the ultra leverage, like narrow scope minutes. It would make sense that Booker has taken a ton of those. Look, I will not, rehash my gushing of Dennis Smith Jr., but the rim finishing and the rim pressure, the distribution, the point of attack, I mean, it's all been fantastic. I hope he's back in the lineup very, very soon. And I hope, it's such a strange thing, Richie, to feel so downtrodden about kind of what's happened this season, but also at the same time, have some of these young prospects that you kind of hope are part of the team's future for a long time. I mean, you talk about Dennis Smith Jr. and you talk about Nick Richards and you talk about Teo Maladone and Kai Jones. I mean, these are guys that, should hopefully be a part of this team's future as some of these veterans get faded out either by contract expirations or trades. That's really cool to see Dennis Smith finishing at the rim and finishing at the rim even better when the pressure is the highest. All right, my last stat kind of dovetails with yours. It's a more general clutch numbers rundown. I try to follow this from time to time, and I'm actually gonna try and make an optimistic take on Steve Clifford's offense based on these clutch numbers, which is admittedly quite a stretch, but. So the Hornets have played in the more broadly defined kind of NBA.com clutch definition that you shared. The Hornets have played the fourth most clutch minutes in the NBA, and they've played the 11th most clutch games played. They are 3-8 in their clutch games, in games when the score is within 5 points within 5 minutes. They are 22nd in field goal percentage in clutch games. They are 15th. In 3-point percentage in clutch games, and they are second in assist in clutch games. They also have a higher winning percentage in clutch games than they do in real games. They've won about 37% of their clutch games, and they've only won 30% of their actual games. So, is there a magic spell, a trick that I can pull to say that when the full complement of players are back, that Steve Clifford is capable of constructing a decently efficient offense, because when he has a bit more maybe control over kind of the chess pieces late in the game with timeouts and underneath and side out of bounds and move, advancing the ball ahead late in games and drawing up plays, like the Hornets have been better in the clutch offensively than they have overall. So, yeah, look, it's a wing and a prayer, Richie, but I'm trying to draw some positive optimisms on the fact that the reason why the offense is so horrific is not because we chose a coach that is a defensive, dogged veteran coach and that we moved away from kind of a creative, free-flowing offensive coach, and it's just because of the dang injuries.
We'll probably never know, because we are not going to get a sustained amount of games in a row, I would think, with everyone healthy. I think, even if LaMelo comes back, you're still going to have Hayward out. You're going to have these people in and out of the lineup. So, we could just pretend that this team would have been awesome had everyone been here.
One thing that does frustrate me with this team in terms of the clutch operations, it's with the inability to grab defensive rebounds. And so if you were to look at the clutch stats with the Charlotte Hornets in terms of how many opponent second chance points they give up, they are dead last. They give up 2.5 points in clutch situations per game this year. And that's just, it's one of those things where if you play good defense and you get a stop, the possession doesn't stop until you grab that offensive board. So we've seen that frustrating aspect of this team where they're giving the opponent too many opportunities with second chance points, and they happen to be dead last in the NBA in terms of opponent second chance points in the final 5 minutes in a game within 5 points. So we're going to go ahead and wrap here. I really enjoyed this exercise with you, Lee. And if you guys enjoyed it, be sure to share this with others. Be sure to look into BuzzBeat Plus if you're interested in ad-free episodes, early access to episodes, and all those different types of perks that you get with that. Also, I mentioned this at the top of the podcast. We really love if you guys can give us a rating and review on Apple Podcast. It should take you no more than 45 seconds to do that. So we appreciate everyone joining, and we will talk to you guys later. For Lee, I am Richie. Go Hornets.